Supporting WHYY Germantown Friends School. Learning is for life. This idea is at the heart of Germantown Friends School, where the years from kindergarten through 12th grade are viewed as just one chapter in a long learning adventure. At GFS, the sense of the power and value of education defines the daily work. Students learn that the world is theirs to experience, to understand, to create, and to change. Learn more about the GFS K-Life mission at an open house on Wednesday, November 11th, 8:15 to 11 a.m. Reservations at germantownfriends.org.
It seemed as though things couldn't get any worse for Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane. Then, this week happened. I'm Brad Linder, in for Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Joining me now for our Friday Reporters Roundtable is WHYY's Mary Wilson. Mary, this week saw the airing of a longstanding feud between Kane and Judge Barry Feudale, who oversaw a statewide grand jury until complaints from Kane got him removed. This week, we saw allegations of illegal leaks and break-ins, and a certain former Pennsylvania state senator's name resurfaced. Mary, can you walk us through the details?
Sure. The battle between Kane and Feudale goes back to at least 2013. Kane had him removed as a grand jury judge. And news outlets reported more recently that an ally of Kane had obtained emails showing Feudale was leaking secret material to the press pertaining to his removal. That's a sensitive subject for Kane, as she faces criminal charges now for doing something similar, leaking privileged materials and then lying about it under oath. After the news stories, Kane released some of the Feudale emails herself last week, and she said in an accompanying statement that the emails indicated what she called a reckless breach, and she suggested the leaking could complicate post-conviction motions in cases overseen by Feudale. Feudale filed a complaint against Kane in response. He filed it with state and federal authorities, numerous authorities, and in it he called her a rogue attorney general. He claims she dropped charges against former Philadelphia State Senator Vincent Fumo in connection to the Turnpike pay-to-play case. So far, that's just an allegation.
After Kane suggested that Feudale had leaked information about the Jerry Sandusky grand jury to the press, a judge summoned her into a closed-door session yesterday to prevent evidence to back up her claim. Did she have any evidence?
No, and this is the shortest answer I have for anything in this whole saga. The judge who summoned Kane said she had no evidence of leaks about the Sandusky grand jury. A spokesman for Kane says she never meant to allege that Feudale leaked grand jury-related information, but always meant to intend that he leaked information related to his own removal.
Kane's also fighting to keep her job after losing her law license. On Monday, there will be a hearing of a special committee determining whether the suspension of Kane's law license affects her ability to continue as state attorney general. What can you tell us about that?
Kane sent a lengthy letter to the committee today questioning its legal authority to exist, and actually more than questioning, just outright saying she doesn't believe it has any legal basis. The committee members I have called say they're still reviewing that letter. The committee, I should say here, claims to have subpoena power, so we could be in for yet another showdown.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
That's WHYY's Mary Wilson. Yesterday, a jury convicted Chip Fattah, Congressman Chaka Fattah's son. He was found guilty of 22 tax and bank fraud charges. A judge agreed to let him remain free until his February sentencing date. While Fattah tried to make his case in court during the three-week trial, one of the most interesting aspects of the case was how he managed his image outside the courtroom. WHYY's Bobby Allen joins us now to discuss that aspect of the trial. Bobby, tell us what was so unorthodox about covering Chip Fattah's case.
So typically, covering a case as a reporter in federal court, there's almost a formula. You listen to both sides duke it out in the courtroom, and then you talk to the defendant's attorney after. You know, during the trial, the prosecutors usually don't comment, and reporters have to rely on official charging documents like an indictment to get their side of the story. And that last part stayed true here. The U.S. Attorney's Office didn't grant interviews during the trial. The truly bizarre part was talking to Chip. Not through an attorney, not reading a statement, just looking this guy in the eyes minutes after he faced seasoned federal prosecutors and talking to him like a human, one-on-one. It was really disarming and honestly kind of refreshing in some ways.
And he was representing himself in this case, which is part of the reason why, instead of talking to an attorney, you were talking directly to Fatah. In the courtroom, it was pretty evident that he didn't have an attorney, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, having never gone to law school or even finished undergrad, for that matter, he didn't quite know the rules of criminal procedure. There were constant sidebars, an unusual number of objections from prosecutors, and Chip would often bring up totally irrelevant information. Here's a good example of that.
An American citizen, a lifelong Philadelphian, who's never been charged with any criminal charges or even arrested.
There's no evidence of that.
They haven't.
Well,
I'm sorry. I'll move on, Your Honor. Moving on. Thank you. So let's talk about 8 through 10.
Apparently, the jury wasn't convinced by this direct appeal to them. He thought that it would all work in his favor, right?
Yeah, I mean, part of his strategy was depicting himself as a victim, you know, just a successful businessman who was unfairly being attacked by overzealous prosecutors trying to smear the Fatah name. But jurors, in the end, felt more convinced by the evidence presented to them, illustrating instances of lying, cheating, and stealing, than they were his story of being a vulnerable business guy under attack for what he would say is basically being bad at paperwork. After hearings, he'd call me, text me, walk down to the WHYY studio. He was more than available. Thing is, his points sometimes got muddled in his passion. Here's Chip talking to me after one day of his trial last week.
My 259 Strategies LLC brought in $700,000 in 2.5 years, but whatever. And what I'm saying is, this is a progression. You know, I started with photography. I started making money. I got to a limit. I figured out another way to make money. And that's what you're going to see for the rest of this case. We're going to keep figuring out ways. I'm going to keep showing people that over the years, all I've done is figure out how to make money. I mean, if you heard their opening statement, I think they said that I was sitting around eating pizza. Well, guess what? I was eating pizza, but I was making a lot of money. That's what I'm going to show. I got to go, Bobby.
Prosecutors say he'll likely serve 4 years in jail for this, but he plans to appeal the fraud charges. What's the likelihood that he'll succeed?
Well, it depends whom you ask. Talk to lawyers and they'll tell you he has an incredibly small chance of winning an appeal. In a criminal case, you can't win an appeal by saying, I'm mad at the jury got this wrong, they missed some piece of evidence. The standard for overturning a jury verdict in federal court is very stringent and hard to meet. He'd have to show that some technical element of federal law was misapplied, or that, you know, a juror was tainted somehow, or that the judge gave the jury improper instructions.
Fatah's due in court for a sentencing in February. I guess we'll see what happens next. Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Brad.
WHYY's Bobby Allen. Open enrollment under the Affordable Care Act began this week for those seeking coverage for 2016. And as WHYY's Alana Gordon reports, local and national officials descended on Philadelphia today to spread the word.
In the very back of Health Center 10, Mayor Michael Nutter and others rallied around the start of open enrollment.
You can hoop it up a little bit for Health Center 10. Give it up for Health Center 10.
Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell dropped in, stressing the ACA's track record expanding health coverage.
And that translates to basically 17.6 million fewer Americans are uninsured. So what we want to do is take that progress and build on it. And that's what open enrollment's about.
Inside the center, Donna Sullivan waits to meet with an application counselor.
I have some health issues where I definitely need health insurance.
Sullivan is nervous. She's on a fixed income and tried signing up last year, but it was too expensive.
I have my utilities, gas, electric, water. It's nothing I could take away in order to afford it.
Rates are going up in 2016 for many plans. Secretary Burwell stresses that most people qualify for financial assistance. Regardless, Health Center 10 is packed, trying to keep up with patients both with and without insurance.
And then we have a lab we do on-site phlebotomy. We have the flu campaign here.
Dr. Thomas Story walks past the pharmacy, the behavioral health offices, and rows of people waiting in the dental area.
And last year there were over 56,000 visits, so it's very busy.
New patients once had to wait more than 6 months for an appointment here. Story, who oversees Philadelphia's health centers, is thrilled Center 10 is getting about $500,000 more from Washington to cut the backlog.
We're really beyond capacity, so for us to expand services, we really had to look at going into evening hours and weekend hours.
The center also benefits when longtime patients like airport worker Hamid Gill get coverage. The center recently helped him sign up for Medicaid. Gil just wrapped up a regular checkup with his doctor.
She wants me to, you know, like, keep my diabetes at the bottom.
So how are you feeling?
Good. I'm feeling good.
The city says the percentage of health center patients who are now insured has gone up 10% thanks to the ACA and Medicaid expansion. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
Amid what some New Jersey officials are calling an opioid and heroin epidemic, there's a push to increase drug treatment across the state. But this week, one of the largest long-term recovery centers in New Jersey announced it will close in the spring. WHYY's Joe Hernandez has the story.
The John Brooks Recovery Center has been operating in Atlantic City since 1969. Today, it has 119 beds for long-term inpatient drug treatment. But that is about to drop to zero, says CEO Alan Oberman.
I think the whole thing is really sad. We tell the clients that we'll be closed. I've had family members calling me about this. You know, what do they mean? How could they do this?
Oberman says John Brooks has to close because the state will not pony up enough money to move the recovery center out of Atlantic City's tourist district. The state reimbursement to the center for long-term recovery beds is so low, about $68 per day, that Oberman says funding construction of a new facility somewhere else is impossible.
We really lose money on the program. It's supported by some of our other programs and donations. So you can't go to a bank with a statement that shows that you don't have any extra revenue over expenses and expect them to lend you $6 million.
A Christie administration spokesman says the state continues to work with John Brooks and hopes to avoid a shutdown. Drug addiction treatment has been a key issue for Christie as governor. On the presidential campaign trail in New Hampshire this week, he said the country needs to give addicts the tools to recover, not send them to prison. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
In today's headlines, it's official. America's birthplace is now the country's first World Heritage City, joining more than 200 other places that have played pivotal roles in human history. A panel in South America voted to give Philadelphia the designation today. Other World Heritage cities include Berlin, Paris, and Havana. It was close on election night, but it appears Republican Al Taubenberger has won a seat on Philadelphia City Council, unseating fellow Republican Denny O'Brien by fewer than 500 votes. Taubenberger says it's been a long quest to win public office.
Ran for United States Congress for mayor. I ran for city council at large and ran for state representative. And I ran for city council at large again. This time I feel confident I've won this office.
Absentee ballots still need to be tallied before the result's official, but candidates agree they aren't likely to change the outcome. Taubenberger will join incumbent Republican David O as one of the two minority party at-large representatives on city council. Checking the forecast, mostly cloudy with a low around 61 degrees tonight. Tomorrow, cloudy and cooler with a high near 63. Tomorrow night, more clouds with a low around 45 degrees. Sunday, sunny with a high near 57. And Monday, more sunshine with a high near 61. It's 72 degrees at 619. This is Newsworks Tonight. Still ahead, nothing makes parents more nervous than a child with lice in their kid's classroom. But experts say that anxiety is overblown.
Lice really aren't going anywhere. They've got a nice, comfortable little area, warm, with food on a head, and they're not jumping or flying or leaping or going anyplace else.
That's coming up as Newsworks Tonight continues.
The School in Rose Valley, a progressive preschool through elementary school, supports WHYY. Located on 9 acres near Media, Pennsylvania, SRV's balanced approach to education taps students' intrinsic motivation, features personalized instruction at every grade level, and emphasizes daily outdoor play. Hosting a family open house on Saturday, November 7th from 10 to noon. Details about the School in Rose Valley on their Facebook page or at theschoolinrosevalley.org.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps make nonprofits stronger, offering workshops and services designed to increase effectiveness and build the capacity of organizations throughout southeastern Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Foundation can help you support the organizations you care about today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or online at philafound.org.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Brad Linder, in for Dave Heller. Recent research has found that head lice have mutated genetically to become resistant to most over-the-counter treatments. The news is creating some panic around a topic that already gives many people the creeps. But healthcare providers caution everybody to stay calm. Mike and Scott reports from WHYY's Health and Science Desk.
Schools are often seen as the place where lice infestations get their start, but Beth Maddy, president of the National Association of School Nurses, says that's not the case.
It's not a school issue, it's a community issue.
Maddy works in the Brandywine School District in Wilmington, Delaware. She says school usually just happens to be the place where lice are detected after a teacher sends a head-scratching kid to the nurse's office. Maddy says people also tend to vastly overestimate how quickly the insects spread.
Lice really aren't going anywhere. They've got a nice, comfortable little area, warm, with food on a head, and they're not jumping or flying or leaping or going anyplace else.
Lice can't survive very long away from a person's head.
So these are eggs, and these are little babies.
Ma.
Eileen Steinberg is combing out lice and nits from the hair of 9-year-old Alyssa McCabe. Steinberg makes house calls for her business, the Center for Lice Control.
Over 95% of lice infestations come from head-to-head contact. A very small amount of lice comes from sharing brushes, hats, and helmets.
The nits, the eggs of lice, are glued to the hair shaft and don't move. So pregnant females on the loose are the only real cause for concern. Steinberg also checks Alyssa's family members and asks about friends she's had head-to-head contact with.
Me and my friend, yesterday we were doing our cheer, and at the end of the cheer we have to make a heart with our hands and put our heads together, so that might have been one of the ways she could have got it.
Steinberg has developed her own formula to suffocate lice. It's made with olive oil and a silicone. She combs out all of the nits, and then there's a follow-up in 6 days. Cleanup involves washing the bedding, cleaning brushes, and vacuuming. Nothing crazy. School nurse Beth Maddy says many schools overreact to lice, but they're not looking at the most current science.
Children do not need to go home if they have head lice. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten the message out.
She says sending kids home doesn't help lice from spreading, but results in missed days in school and lost work days for parents. I'm Mike and Scott, WHYY News.
Republican presidential candidates will take the stage for their next debate in Milwaukee on Tuesday. Newsworks Tonight host Dave Heller spoke with Gallup poll editor-in-chief Frank Newport about what Americans expect in the next showdown.
Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, it's a double-edged sword. Networks and their advertisers love the big audience that tunes in to see sparks fly. Candidates want to manage their message. Regardless, is there evidence that the debates to date have weakened the image of the GOP candidates as an aggregate?
There is not, and that's an interesting hypothesis because although these debates, Dave, are aimed primarily at Republican voters, obviously, Democrats and independents, if they don't watch them, at least hear about them and see the news coverage and so forth. So it's an interesting idea that maybe all the goings-on have actually weakened the image of these candidates among independents and Democrats, but we simply don't see it in the data. In fact, Democrats haven't moved much at all in terms of their opinions of the Republican candidates. They do have opinions. There's high or don't know, but a lot of Democrats have opinions of the candidates. But when we look at the data way back in July and August, virtually after the most recent debates, we simply don't see much sign of movement at all among Democrats. It's simply not affecting them. Independents, a little more movement, but not nearly as much as among Republicans. And when we look at independents' changes in their opinions of the Republican candidates, we see some went up and some went down, but no idea that there's a systematic either up tick or downtick in independents' views of the Republican candidates.
Frank, in the news this week, the State Department turned down TransCanada's request to delay a review of the Keystone XL oil pipeline, and now it's widely thought that the Obama administration will reject the controversial $10 billion, 1,700-mile-long plan. Where does the public stand on this issue?
The public supports the Keystone pipeline and has in every poll that I've seen. This is remarkably stable. I was pretty amazed. I looked back several years ago in the poll we did, it was 57% who supported the Keystone pipeline, 29% opposed. And then I looked at a more recent poll done by Pew, one done by USA Today, one done this year by CBS, and lo and behold, almost exactly the same numbers. About 60%, give or take, of Americans support building the Keystone pipeline. But there is a big partisan break there. 81% of Republicans support it, but only 44% of Democrats. And, of course, that's where Obama comes in. Some Democrats have alleged that the pipeline would, in fact, harm the environment, and that's why he wants, that is he, being the president, wants to reject it.
Frank, it's been less than half a year since the Supreme Court landmark decision that the fundamental right to marry is guaranteed to same-sex couples. Enough time to gauge differences in support for same-sex marriage?
Yes, that's one of the most changeable attitudes that we have measured in our Gallup history. We've asked the question twice this year about support for legalized same-sex marriage, and both times it was right around 60%, 58-60% of Americans say yes. We just have to go back less than 10 years to find where only 40% of Americans supported it, and going back further than that into the 90s, it was down like 27%. So yes, we have a majority of Americans who support same-sex marriage.
And Frank, in that time, is there a change in the percentage of LGBT Americans as an aggregate who are legally married to a same-sex partner?
There has, and I'm glad you phrased it that way, because the question we ask in our tracking is, do you identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender? And we don't break out those four categories within that broad group. So all we can do is look at that broad group, and lo and behold, prior to the Supreme Court decision, 7.9% in that group said they were married to a same-sex partner. Fast forward to the data we've collected since the Supreme Court decision, and that has gone up to 9.6%. So our analysts and our experts that we have consulting with us on this think it's pretty clear that the number of same-sex marriages in this country have gone up after the Supreme Court decision.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. Finally, former Philadelphia Mayor Frank Rizzo may no longer be a household name, but playwright Bruce Graham still remembers Rizzo as a larger-than-life figure and a local politician with national influence.
He didn't agree with McGovern. He didn't agree with the party's candidate, so he went with his own. In some ways, we need more people with that state of mind now instead of just straight party.
Graham is the mind behind Rizzo, a play about the two-term mayor being staged at Christchurch Neighborhood House in Old City. While the dialogue may come off like an exaggeration, Graham often used actual quotes from the man himself.
You threatened to fire four judges, two blacks and two women.
Don't go making this about race. They're too damn lenient. What we need is our own electric chair, a lot quicker. I'll personally pull the switch if they run out of people who want to do it. I'm available.
You can hear and see much more of Peter Crimmin's interview with Bruce Graham at newsworks.org. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from our intern, Kevin Rowley. The news director is Eugene Son. Our engineers this week were Al Banks and Diana Martinez. John Musoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. I'm Brad Linder for NewsWorks Tonight.
If your child is struggling in school, why wait to make a change? Supporting WHYY Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli, for students who learn differently. Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty. An information session is Sunday, November 8th from 1 to 3. More information about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. Now considering applications for grades 6 through 11.
On the next Fresh Air, interviews with Lena Dunham and Ron Perlman. They each have memoirs just published in paperback. Perlman starred in Sons of Anarchy and stars in the Amazon series Hand of God. Dunham's HBO series Girls returns in February. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Of Mozart's 27 piano concertos, his final statement in the form may also be his most eloquent. Jonathan Biss joins the Philadelphia Orchestra for Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 27. And Robin Ticciotti returns to conduct Robert Schumann's Fourth Symphony. Mozart tickets at 215-893-1999 or at philorc.org. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Kimmel Center. Mozart and more with the Philadelphia Orchestra.